Welcome back to What Do They Know podcast. This week, the guys discuss the statement wins from Denver and Washington, CJ Stroud's big day, and the struggles of Pete Carroll and the Raiders. But hey, what do they know?
What do they know? Well, we are about to find out. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the What Do They Know podcast, week 5 edition. Nick and Jeff back with you as always. And Jeff clearly is in a much better mood than I am.
Hey, it's about time. Oh, man, got off the snide.
Yeah, congrats. You beat the Giants, all right?
Hey, a win's a win.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Listen, I'm bitter, and I'll be the first to admit that I was a miserable human being yesterday. Yesterday being Sunday. So I got to watch the Jets get absolutely waxed by the Cowboys, and then I got to watch the Yankees get absolutely waxed by the Blue Jays.
Yeah.
So yesterday was not a fun day in the Hoskins household.
Yeah, I mean, high risk, high reward when your team is in the postseason in baseball, and obviously, I mean, football.
The game was never close enough to even get nervous about.
Right.
Like, so I guess there's that.
Right.
The wild card series, I was a mess because both those games were really, really, or all three of those games were pretty close.
Yeah.
So not a fun day for me. Not a fun sports day, and it's really, really depressing. Only going into week 6 and knowing that the Jets games are meaningless.
Last winless team.
Correct.
I should say. So, yeah, it's a little rough in Jets land right now. I mean,
You want to know what Aaron Glenn said today?
Uh-huh.
There was some stuff that he saw on the tape that he was really proud of. Really, guy? I mean, Jets fans are getting really fed up with this dude's press conferences, both after the game and then Monday after he watches the tape.
Uh-huh.
It's rainbows and butterflies. Like, you would never know that they're 0-5 and look horrible.
Right. Yeah. I was talking to a buddy, and I was like, if Brian Daboll can survive the New York media for as long as he has, obviously Jets are maybe a little bit more starving in terms of a competitor, because I feel like they've always had the defense to compete. Whereas the Giants just have been trying to put a product on the field that any fan can be hopeful for. But yeah, for the Jets, it feels like regression, to be honest with you.
100%.
Because of that defense. So that's the defense was something you guys could always hang your head on. And unfortunately, even though you hired a defensive minded head coach, it hasn't panned out that way.
I saw something today that was super depressing. Basically said when they fired Robert Saleh, they were 2-3. And since they fired Robert Saleh, I think they're like 3-14.
Ooh.
Or like 3-11.
Ooh.
So nothing good from the Jets land, but let's enough of them. Nobody wants to hear talk about the last place Jets. So as always, we will kick it off with top stories, and I will let you kick it off, sir.
Perfect. So my top story is CJ Stroud. And honestly, the Ravens are in disarray right now. They are an absolute dumpster fire.
Yeah.
But honestly, this is a game that CJ Stroud needed. He's been struggling for most of last year, and then for the first month of this season, he's just been on the struggle bus. But 23 for 27 this past week, 244 and 4 passing touchdowns. That's something you can build off of if you're the Texans. Only allowed 2 sacks, so that's something the offensive line can hold their heads up high about. It's just going to be one of those things where do you go from here if you're Houston? D'Amico Ryan has to feel confident that CJ Stroud is probably back into his rookie form, and Houston needs that if they're going to compete for that division. Obviously, on the other side, Baltimore had Cooper Rush starting, no Lamar Jackson, so who knows where their mentality is at right now. But if CJ Stroud did not take advantage of that team during this moment, honestly, I'd be raising the red flag on CJ Stroud, as unfortunate as it sounds.
Yeah, I mean, who would have thought that the Ravens would be considered a get-right game?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, I mean, that's just crazy. Yeah. Talk about the team that usually has a defense that this year, I mean, it's nowhere to be found. I mean, say what you want about not having Lamar, and I know that didn't help, but Lamar doesn't play defense.
Right.
So
yeah.
I'm not sure that game would have gone a ton differently, other than maybe the Ravens would have put up some more points and made it a little competitive.
Right.
But the Ravens defense, my God,
it's ugly.
It's so ugly. And I mean, you know, to your point about CJ Stroud, I'm glad, you know, because for a while you and I were saying, what is going on with Houston?
Right. Yeah.
And so hopefully this is kind of the springboard to better things. I know they, it's, you could say it's perfect timing, you could say it's bad timing, because they're taking that performance into the bye week.
Mm-hmm.
So are they going to be able to build off of that, or is that coming at the absolute worst time after they had their best offensive game?
Mm-hmm.
Time will tell. But you know, good, it's at least a good sign of things to come.
Yeah, and I mean, CJ Stroud for the most part spread the ball out. Christian Kirk had 4 receptions, Collins had 4 receptions, then Jayden Higgins had 4 receptions, Schultz had 5 receptions. You couldn't ask for a better overall quarterback performance than what CJ Stroud gave.
Agreed.
Yep. And then my second top story is Pete Carroll. A few weeks ago, I called for Joe Flacco's retirement. I'm at that point.
For somebody else.
I'm calling
retire.
For someone else to retire. It's time to pack it on.
Pete and his gum chewing.
Yes. I mean, he's 74 years old. I mean, at some point, I understand you have love for the game, and maybe it trounces. You know, it's the world to you, basically, if you're that hardcore about it. But I mean, coming back to the Raiders of all teams is puts you in a hole, and I feel like the Raiders are a long game sort of thing for a coach. You have to rebuild. You have to draft correctly, and I'm not sure if Pete Carroll has that many years to see that program see itself all the way into a playoff or a contender sort of status that the Raiders are desperately needing. Obviously, they moved to Vegas. They've been terrible since they moved to Vegas. That's the whole reason they moved out of Oakland. To me, it's just been about, you know, trying to put puzzle pieces that don't fit. Geno Smith was a decent signing. I mean, they had some prior camaraderie there in Seattle with Pete Carroll and Geno Smith, but it just has not worked out for them over here in Vegas.
I mean, they gave Geno $75 million,
yeah,
and he looks horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, we're quickly approaching horrible contract discussion around Geno.
Yeah.
The
unfortunate piece here is they don't really have a backup that they can hang there.
I don't even know who their backup is.
Can you pick it?
Okay. So they don't have a backup. No, I mean, I think we talked about it a little bit in the preseason that mm-hmm. Both moves, Pete Carroll and Geno, both felt like a bridge to something different.
Yeah.
And I think that bridge is going to get here sooner than maybe Vegas would have liked.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
If it continues down this path, I mean, they just look non-competitive.
Mm-hmm.
And Geno is just putting them in a really bad spot. Brock Bowers is injured. He missed this week. Also, side note, I thought it was hilarious that Brock Bowers was out and Dallas Goedert scored.
Sorry.
If you listened to our episode last week, somebody had a question about those two, and we said, stick with Brock Bowers and avoid Dallas Goedert. Hashtag, what do they know?
To be fair, we didn't know that Brock Bowers
had his PCL. That changes things. But I saw that yesterday, the combination of the two, and it just made me chuckle.
Yep.
You can't, for me, you can't look at Pete Carroll as anything else than a bridge to whoever they have their eye on,
right?
Long term, or whatever their plan is long term. He's just a stopgap.
Yeah, and that's not fair to Pete Carroll. I feel like he needs to realize it for himself. If he wants to continue coaching, there's got to be some other way to do it. I mean, him and I'll step a little bit out of bounds here on this one, but Bill Belichick, I feel like they're on the same boat.
Oh, good God!
Yeah. Like you're both great coaches in your own respect. You guys had great years in your past. I mean, obviously Belichick with the Patriots and Pete Carroll with the Seahawks, and even back when he was coaching USC. They have the great stops and they have a great tradition and, you know, great history. But I mean, at some point you just got to hang it up and enjoy life for what it is. I mean, there is life outside of football, believe it or not, for those two. But it's just hard to see Pete Carroll if this is the way he goes out.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's rough.
I think it's going to be.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
All right. So for me, My first one, we had two big wins yesterday from teams that I kind of feel like in the first couple weeks of the season got forgotten about a little bit because they didn't start out how everybody expected. And that was with Denver and Washington yesterday.
Okay.
So Denver, you know, lost to the Colts. I think they lost to the Chargers, back-to-back losses. And then since then, yesterday, they had a nice comeback win over the Eagles. They were down 17-3 in the fourth quarter, late. And were able to string together a couple great drives. Scored late with 5 minutes left. And how about Sean Payton going for two with, I think, still 5.5 minutes left? Not typically when you do that. Normally it's, you know, under 2 minutes when, you know, the game is all but out of reach.
Yeah, he must have seen something from that Eagles defense that he was like, you know what, this play call, boom, bam,
dude,
right there.
What a set of onions on that guy. Yeah. Because, I mean, at the time when they went for two, it was, they were down 17-16. Right? So it pushed it to 18-17, and then they ultimately, you know, got a field goal to stretch it to 21-17. But gosh, what a call.
Right.
And, you know, Denver, back-to-back weeks now where their offense has looked good. They were able to take down one of the best defenses in the league in Philadelphia. So I feel like that was a really big statement win for Denver. And then same thing with Washington. They had a couple losses. Obviously, Jaden Daniels got injured, and they stuck it to the Chargers yesterday. They were down 10-0 and scored 27 unanswered points. Jaden Daniels had a big game. Debo, the running back with eight names, had a
Course Kamara.
Had a great game. So I felt like those, both of those wins were kind of like, hey, we're still here.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, they didn't, those two teams did not start the way that everybody kind of expected them to going into the season. But they're starting to right the ship, I think, and we're going to see some good football from those teams going forward.
Yeah, no, I was mostly impressed with, obviously, Denver going into Philadelphia, heading him the first loss of the year. Bo Nix, you know, started off a little slow, obviously, as you said, 17-3 going into the fourth quarter, but I mean, they turned it on when the game needed to get. So to me, that's a statement win that proves that the system that they have in place right now is going to work. I mean, they're my sleeper pick out of the AFC. So that was very I was very happy to see that happen, especially as being a Sean Payton guy. I like Sean Payton regardless of how his tenure in New Orleans ended. But, yeah, to me, Denver is for real. Their defense is for real. There's just not much you can, you know, ask for more in terms of Denver. In terms of Washington, I mean, their defense, man, this was a defense that was just getting scored on and walloped last year. So to hold Justin Herbert and the Chargers to 10 points, that's impressive. Even with the makeshift offensive line that the Chargers have right now, Joel is on the IR, I believe. Yes, there's some weaknesses there on the offensive line, and they put a lot of pressure on Justin Herbert. I believe they got like six sacks or something. To me, yes, but it's still one thing to see it, another thing to actually go and take action upon it. And without Terry McLaurin there, your number one wide receiver, and Jaden Daniels still put up some numbers, I think it's a very positive direction that Washington's going on. But when Terry McLaurin is back and Jaden Daniels can start connecting with him a little bit more, I feel like this is a team that it's going to be reflecting a lot on how they looked like last year when they made the NFC Championship game.
Yeah, I agree. Big things to come from both of these teams. And to your point, you have Denver making it to the Super Bowl, don't you?
Yeah.
So you had to feel a little bit better about them after yesterday.
Yeah, it's just about, I guess, obviously Bo Nix coming off his rookie year and then entering his second year. You don't really know what to expect. But I feel like there's a lot there that I anticipated that was going to grow from Bo Nix. A lot of poise, not a lot of pressure on him. You know, the moment's not too big for him or anything like that. Especially with Sean Payton, who's been there, done that. With that mentality backing you up, I feel like Denver's in really good hands there.
Yeah, I agree. All right, so what are we overreacting to this week?
Oh, the Saints, obviously.
Oh, of course. They're going to win the Super Bowl.
Undefeated the rest of the way, absolutely. No, I mean, my number one thing, Spencer Rattler is the future.
Oh, my God.
Spencer Rattler, he's making me a believer. I mean, he's only thrown for one interception all year. What more could you ask for from a quarterback, to be honest with you? I mean, he's 67% completion percentage, almost 1,000 yards passing, 6 passing touchdowns. Nick, Spencer Rattler, I'll be honest with you right now. If the Saints have a top five pick, I'm leaning towards not going with a QB. Oh, no. Oh, no. Are you guys going QB?
Oh, my gosh. This is the biggest overreaction I think you've ever had. The biggest.
Probably. Well, that's why the segment is overreaction.
Right. I love it. That's a banger of a start. Come on. This is Spencer Rattler we're talking about. They beat the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Congratulations. Wear your jersey tonight and then burn it.
And then burn it.
moving on
from Rattler.
Listen, all kidding aside, I told you last week after their game against Buffalo, I was impressed with Spencer Rattler.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He surely did not do anything to lose them the game.
Right.
He is a good passer. He looks like he's a good thrower of the football.
Right.
But he doesn't, you know, he's not to the point yet where he's making plays for you.
Yeah, he's not winning games for a team. He's not losing games, but he's not winning games. There's no games that are won because of Spencer Rattler.
You know, I think if to your example or your scenario, if the Saints have a top five pick,
mm-hmm.
you have to explore a quarterback. Unless he continues, they rattle off, you know, let's just say 7-9 wins
mm-hmm.
and looks great. Which in that case they wouldn't have a top five pick, but
right.
You gotta look quarterback.
Yeah, I'm looking at the season's end stats and see how many turnovers he has, how many passing touchdowns he has. I mean, there's a lot of talent lacking outside of the quarterback position as well. It's not just all on, you know, whether it's Spencer Rattler or Tyler Shuck. Eventually, maybe. But overall, I feel like if you just put another quarterback, especially with this year's QB class, who we I feel like a lot of people anticipated Arch Manning to be the name to get.
Dude.
But unfortunately, that is just not happening.
He's not going to declare at this point.
Yeah, no.
There's way.
Yeah, he'd be ill-advised to declare this year. I just don't know who in terms of quarterback prospects you would take with the top five pick. I mean, the number one name is Sellers, I believe, from South Carolina.
Nussmeier from LSU is getting a lot of hype.
Yep.
It's not, from everything I've heard, it's really not a quarterback heavy draft, at least in the first round this year.
So that's where I'm coming from when I also think about Spencer. Well, do you give Spencer Rattler another year, or do you transfer the reins over to Tyler Shuck?
So that's what I was going to say. I still fully expect that at some point this year we're going to see Tyler Shuck. Because I don't think that the Saints are going to have enough wins to where they're going to be competitive and need to stick with a quarterback.
Yeah.
I think they're going to want to see what they have from Shuck.
Yeah.
Maybe it's the second half of the year.
Yeah.
But I still fully expect a quarterback change at some point this year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which is fair. But as of right now.
So did you buy your Spencer Rattler jersey yet?
Not yet.
Okay.
I need another performance just like
all
this.
All right. Fair enough.
And then my second overreaction is the Eagles are bound to self-destruct. They are a ticking time bomb, I feel like. Even though they started off 4-0, they still have A.J. Brown and apparently even DeVonta Smith.
Who you gave props to.
I gave props to last week.
You gave props to last week for just plugging away and doing his thing. And apparently he's just as upset, but he's going about it quieter.
Right. Which, in its own spectacle, deserves its own merit,
yeah.
I feel like. Keep it within the locker room, within the building. But, yeah, I feel like regardless of what happens, you just have way too many weapons. I mean, Saquon Barkley had 9 touches yesterday. You can't do that. Saquon Barkley cannot have less than 15.
Didn't Jalen Hurts throw the ball, like, over 40 times yesterday?
38 times.
38 times. That's not the Eagles' offense.
No.
That is not how it's designed. I think I saw something that combined those Brown and Smith had 18 targets.
Yep. Smith had 10, and Brown had 8 targets.
Dude, it's just not the recipe for the Eagles.
Yeah.
These guys, if they want to win, they need to get over it.
Yeah.
I know it's easy for us to say we're sitting here, you know, talking about it, but it just goes to show, granted, they played a good defense yesterday with Denver, but if the offense all of a sudden is going to start to cater to those guys and their feelings, it's going to be a long season.
Yeah. No, I feel like there's going to have to be a decision made. Either one of those receivers is going to have to get shipped out, or, you know, I don't even know what your other option is, to be honest with you, because I feel like if you stick out with those two and you start realizing that Saquon Barkley is the way to go, and then you're just going to have to deal with it for the rest of the year. And, I mean, kudos to Nick Sirianni to, like, find a way last year to make it all work. But, I mean, at what point do you sacrifice the locker room just to or maybe some wins to satisfy A.J. Brown and Devontae Smith. I mean, especially A.J. Brown, who's been a lot more vocal about it. But no, to me, it's Saquon Barkley's team. It needs to be Saquon Barkley's team. That's going to be your star player. That's how you're going to win football games. A tush push here and there, whatever. But this is not a passing. Even though you have the talent for it, it shouldn't be a passing team. It should not be a passing offense.
I feel like, you know, they were able to get over it last year because they hadn't won it yet, mm-hmm. and they were striving for something. And it almost, to me, kind of seems like, okay, like, we got it. We won the Super Bowl. Now give me my touches. Right. Now I don't care about it as much. Now I want the ball.
Right.
That's what it appears, because nothing's changed. Like, everything should still go through Barkley.
Right.
He's still a stud. They still have a great offensive line. Jalen mm-hmm. Hurts is still the same quarterback. Mm-hmm. Now, why all of a sudden would you drastically change your game plan to make sure that these guys get the ball that much?
Yeah.
It just doesn't, it doesn't make sense to me.
Mm. Yeah, no, I can't explain it. But something's gonna change. Something's gonna have to snap, and I just don't know what it's gonna be.
Yeah, well, I agree. It's a ticking time bomb.
Yep, perfect.
Was that both of them?
Yep.
All right.
Now it's both.
So
of them.
Yesterday was probably the worst loss I've ever seen in professional sports from the Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah.
I'm not even trying to be, you know, get a headline. I'm dead serious.
Yeah. Like,
that was, so they were playing the 0-4 Titans, mm-hmm. right? Who Cam Ward himself said I'm not going to use the word that he used, but he said they were horrible.
Yeah.
And needed to get stuff together. They were up 21-6 late. It's in the fourth quarter.
Right.
Like 10, 11 minutes ago.
Yeah.
And really, you know, undisputably, the turning point was Amari DiMercato. Breaking the 70-yard touchdown, and once again dropping the ball before he crossed the goal line.
Yeah,
a walk-in touchdown, and he decided to celebrate prematurely. Mm-hmm. The ball went out the back of the end zone. The Titans get the ball. They go down and score. They get the ball again, and one of the craziest plays I've ever seen, which is something I feel like I would typically associate with the Jets. Cam Ward throws a pick in the red zone. Cardinals get it. They fumble. The ball gets kicked around and gets recovered in the end zone by the Titans for a touchdown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, you can't make it up. And then the defense just opened its arms and said, here you go, guys, under 2 minutes. And Cam Ward was just able to throw the ball to Calvin Ridley all over the place and get him to, I think, like closer than the 5 mm-hmm. for basically a chip shot game winning field goal as time expired. I mean, you talk about just a back breaking game for a team and for a culture. I don't know how they get past that. I told you this earlier. Yeah. I think that they're going to get waxed by the Colts on Sunday just because of everything that happened yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, this breaks spirits. This breaks, you know, belief in what you're doing. Just like we were talking about the Eagles being a ticking time bomb. I feel like the Arizona Cardinals are a ticking time bomb. What's going to explode? I don't know. To me, you can go two ways about this. You can either, you know, get the classic cop out of firing your head coach and say it's Gannon's fault. You know,
he's punching guys on the sideline.
He basically punched DiMercato over the fumbling that football. But I mean, you can either do that, or you can finally look at Kyler Murray through a microscopic lens and be like, hey, is this guy going to take us to the promised land, or to, you know, somewhere we haven't been before since the days of Kurt Warner? My answer is I'd probably start looking at other QB prospects or something. You know, when DiMercato fumbled that ball, I feel like that was a time a leader of a football team should have came out and you know, set everybody straight, reassure everybody that you know, the offense is going to march down, score some points, and everything's going to be A-okay, you know. But Kyler Murray let that game slip through his fingers as well. He Whether he has the same amount of blame as, like, say, Denver Cardo, I don't. That's tough to say, but at the same time, Kyler Murray, this is supposed to be your football team. You're the one who's supposed to be out there making. You're the franchise quarterback. You're the one who's supposed to be making sure that these sort of things and these sort of lapses and these sort of defeats aren't happening. Obviously, Gannon, you know, he was frustrated, and I mean, do you blame him for kind of hitting DeMarcardi in that situation? I mean, this is something that happens every single year in the NFL, and yet somehow, some way, someone always does it, and it always ends up, you know, costing the team the game or something, and that's why it always makes headlines. But to me, I feel like there's more proof that Kyler Murray is just not the guy for Arizona.
Well, so he always gets heat for his body language on the sideline,
mm-hmm.
even on the field. He walks like he's demonstrative. He walks like he's pissed off all the time.
Yeah.
So his body language is always pretty poor.
Yeah.
But yesterday was at an all-time high. I mean, he was slouched on the bench. Even when the game was still going on, the defense was on the field and needed a big stop. Mm-hmm. You would have thought that his dog died. I mean, he was slouched over, looked like just depressed, mm-hmm. no energy whatsoever, just did not look like a leader of men and a leader of a football team. And so putting his personal characteristics aside, from a football standpoint,
mm-hmm.
I don't think that their offense, and I think it's largely because of Murray and the way that he plays,
mm-hmm.
I don't think that style is ever going to go anywhere, because their whole offense is catered around completions anywhere from like 5 to 10 yards.
Mm-hmm.
They are a completion-based team. They want to dink and dunk and be methodical, and occasionally they'll throw one into Marvin Harrison Jr., or they'll throw, you know, the 10 to 15 to 20 yard pass to Trey McBride.
Mm-hmm.
But that's few and far between. Their offense is boring.
Yeah.
And largely, you know, they lost James Conner, they lost Trey Benson, so they're dealing with a back, you know, third and fourth string running backs, so that's a part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But the pass game, I just think is it's borderline inept to me.
Yeah, they're going to have to evolve at some point, because obviously without James Conner or Trey Benson, you're down to Michael Carter and DeMarcardo. So something has to, whether that's Kyler Murray throwing a little bit more downfield to Marvin Harrison or Trey McBride, or utilizing some of your other wide receivers there. I know Petzing has been getting a lot of heat there as the offensive coordinator for Arizona. And
rightfully so.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. He's been getting heat since last year, I believe. So there's definitely has to be some sort of evolution. The problem is, and we've seen it with back when Cliff Kingsbury was the head coach. I mean, how coachable is Kyler Murray? That's the thing. Even if you do try to evolutionize your offense and maybe create a little bit more of a spread offense and, you know, throw some deep balls, is that something Kyler Murray is open to? or is he going to look downfield and be like, oh, no, there's a safety there, I'm just going to take off with my legs and see what I get? To me, it's a no-win situation right now for Arizona, and it's disappointing to see you know, them implode the way they did against Tennessee. And honestly, it feels almost like a precursor for how the rest of their year is going to be.
100%. My dad was texting me during the game, and well, towards the end when mm-hmm. Tennessee was driving, and he was like, are they really going to blow it? And I'm like, yeah, cause, yes, because they're frauds.
Right.
Was exactly my text back to him, because I think mm-hmm. they are.
Yeah.
Which is super disappointing, because I think you have them winning the division.
Yeah.
I have them winning a wild card spot, and I don't think they're going anywhere this year.
Probably not.
So as bad of a loss as that was,
mm-hmm.
I think we had equally as an impressive win Thursday night.
Right.
The Niners, what Kyle Shanahan was able to do Thursday night against the Rams was, I would say, one of the best coaching performances I've seen in a while.
Oh, yeah.
And overall this season, bigger picture, like coach of the year talk.
Mm.
But specific to Thursday, dude, like I heard, you know, when they released the injury report, Ricky Pearsall, Juwan Jennings, Brock Purdy, George Kittle's already out. Dude, I immediately picked the Rams as my eliminator challenge, because I'm like, there's no way in hell the Niners are going to beat them.
Yeah, how could you not?
And then freaking Mac Jones throws the ball all over the field.
Yeah.
And so Mac Jones looked amazing. I mean, the dude is slinging the ball. He's taking hits. He's coming off the field dry heaving because he's getting nailed so many times.
Yep.
But just continued to make plays. So his stat line,
uh-huh.
33 of 49, 342 yards, 2 touchdowns, 100.9 passer rating.
Ooh.
He's 3-0 as a starter this year.
Brock Purdy who?
I was just going to say Brock that. Purdy Brock who? Purdy who? Just gave the dude hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah.
And Mac Jones is looking like what Brock Purdy should look like.
Right. Yeah.
It's insane. Like, I was blown away watching Mac Jones on Thursday.
Yeah, no, all the compliments to the chef on that one. Mac Jones was just, you know, I feel like this is the promise that a lot of Patriot fans kind of, like, gave up on. Mac Jones would have, you know, some highlights
here. This is what happens when you have an actual offensive coordinator or an offensive mind, i.e. Kyle Shanahan, rather than freaking...
Yeah.
Somebody, Matt Patricia, coaching offense, who's a defensive coordinator. What a stupid thing that the Patriots did. Anyways,
yeah.
Proceed.
But yeah, it goes to show how good coaching is. And yeah, I agree with you. This is head coach of the year sort of performance by Kyle Shanahan. It's something that I feel like no one really anticipated. I mean, Mac Jones with absolutely no a bunch of probably like mechanics or you know, plumbers or anything, just tried him out there, and he was slaying. What'd you say, 49 times?
33 of 49.
That's insane to me. To have the audacity to throw that many times when you're missing all those weapons, that's, I mean, and I mean, Christian McCaffrey obviously is no slouch, but kudos to him as well for being out on the field and contributing to the way that he does for that offense. That's to me, there's no level of compliments I could dish out for the 49ers that's worthy of that performance, to be honest with you.
Crazy. So I mean, they're 4-1. They have three wins. Yeah. They're 3-0 in the division already. Thank you, know, courtesy of Mac Jones, and they're sitting pretty. And you know, I loved his answer after the game, because it would have been so easy for him to stir up any sort of controversy with the way that he played. And somebody flat out asked him, like, I don't know the exact words, but basically, like, does he think that he's going to compete for the starting job? Right. And his answer was, look, I got brought in here to be the backup to Brock. When he's back, he's going to be the quarterback. And I'm just here to get as many wins as I can when I'm playing. Right. I'm paraphrasing. But that was the gist of what he said, which I thought was a great professional answer. But, dude, kudos to him and freaking kudos to Kyle Shanahan. Game of the year, honestly, as far as coaching and how impressed I was with the team so far this year.
Yeah. No, Kyle Shanahan, kudos to him. And honestly, in the future, I'm looking at Kyle Shanahan as that level of upper echelon coaches now. Like, that, there's just no doubt in my mind that he elevates that team. Obviously, we discuss all the time about how Brock Purdy is the sum of the things around him. I think Kyle Shanahan is the X factor for that team. He's the one who elevates that team to levels that maybe their talent doesn't reach.
Agreed.
But, yep.
Agreed. All right, we will jump over to power rankings. I had a tough time with this week, but I'll let you go first.
Okay. So, number one, I feel like it's almost a no-brainer for me right now, and that's the Indianapolis Colts.
Wow. Okay.
Simply because of the way they're winning. They've been blowing out teams left and right. Obviously, Las Vegas.
There it is.
There's the
every year.
Oh, every year. Vegas. I'm Miami earlier in the year. To me, the Colts are that team that understand what they are and what they can be. And they're just going out and not taking anything for granted. To me, they're very well coached. In terms of coaching of the year, coach of the year candidates, Shane Steichen should be up there as well. Number two, I got the Lions. They're also a team that's settled down and showing what they can be. Number three, the Bills. I'm not going to knock them too much for losing to the Patriots on a field goal. It happened, a divisional opponent. It happens. Number four, the Bucks. They're always around there. They're always, you know, I mean, what is it? Four comeback drives by Baker Mayfield at this point. All their wins are by a game winning touchdown.
He's a stud.
Yeah, game winning drive. Yeah, it's
and that guy broke a rookie of the year. Just give it to him now.
Yeah, and then number five, I had a hard time with number five simply because of all the 4-1 teams, but I gave it to the Broncos.
Okay,
I think they're starting to hit their stride, and I feel like they're going to be a tough out for any team.
Okay, so I wanted to look at not just record, right? Okay. Or not just who lost.
Right.
Right. I wanted to like look at the quality of the team and how I think they're going to be long term.
Okay.
So for me, even though the Bills and the Eagles both lost, I kept them 1-2. I still think the Bills are the best team. I still think the Eagles are right behind them. Every team's going to lose, right? Yeah. I'm not going to knock them for getting their first loss of the season,
right?
Both against respectable opponents.
Right.
The Broncos are going to be in the playoffs, and the Patriots, there's a chance that they're just getting started and they might be in the playoffs. So I'm not going to knock them. So I actually kept my 1-2 the same.
Okay.
Which is what I struggled with. I moved Detroit up to number 3.
Okay.
They're, like you said, they're playing great. They're playing great football. You know, handled Cincinnati pretty easily yesterday. Tampa at 4. And then I took the Colts off my top 5. Ooh. Even though they lost, I'm starting to, like, I gotta see them beat somebody.
Okay.
Because, you named all the guys that they beat.
Really good teams.
No, the combined record is got to be just horrible.
Yeah.
And quite honestly, their win against the Broncos, their one questionable leverage call on a field goal away from losing that game.
Yeah.
So I got to see it from the Colts, but I brought the Niners up to number 5.
Okay.
Just because, if you think of two of their 4 wins, Seattle, who's a dang good team, and the Rams, who are a dang good team.
Yeah, they were up there with me with the Broncos.
So I bumped the Niners up, and I actually, which I never do after a win. I don't drop people out of the top 5 after a win, but I did with the Colts just because I that's how impressed I was with the Niners. So a little bit of a fluctuation this week.
Yeah, I dropped the Eagles out of my top 5 just because of that whole segment about whether they're going to implode. Yeah. I just don't know where that team's going, to be honest.
It's always something, man. And I'll be really curious to see if they bounce back. You know, they have a short week, Thursday at the Giants, which, could be a great thing for them. A
get right game.
But the Giants have been scrappy the last few weeks. So I think this week will be telling. Do they come out and do they handle business and look like, the typical Eagles where they're running the ball down their throat? If so, I think we're going to be fine. If not, dude, I can't wait to see what happens the rest of the year. I know a lot of Eagle fans that at work, and I'm be curious to hear what they think if they continue to lose like this. But
right.
All right. Fantasy portion of the show. Oof. Do you have anything? Because I got a couple different questions that I kind of just came up with. So I'll let you go first. Let you go first.
Well, I just had some running backs, whether it was time to give up on these guys.
Okay.
Obviously, Rico Dowdall had a huge game for Carolina.
Yeah.
23 carries for 206 yards of TD.
Yeah.
I mean, at this point, do you give up on Chuba Hubbard, to be honest?
I really hope not, because I have him.
Yeah.
And I'm in we're in a 14-team league where options on the waiver wire are slim to none.
Yep.
So I really need Chuba Hubbard to continue to play, because I picked up some dude, I don't even know his first name. His first initial is Z for the Vikings, and he did jackdiddly squat. I got negative 0.2 from him because he had 18 rushing yards and a fumble. So that's my option if Chuba Hubbard is out. So let's not even go down that rabbit hole, because I need him to play and play well. The next one.
All right, Derrick Henry. So Derrick Henry has been averaging 7.5 points the last 4 games. Outside that one outlier against Buffalo, he just has not been, the Derrick Henry of the past. I don't think he's eclipsed 50 yards rushing in any of these past 4 games. It's insane.
There's nothing that looks right about Baltimore.
Yeah, and the problem with it is that defense, as we discussed before, and all of a sudden does the game plan go out the window, and all of a sudden Derrick Henry doesn't become a factor anymore.
It's gotta. Yeah. Right? I mean, you can only run the ball so much. Like, they were down, 41-10 against Houston? Like, you're not running the ball with Derrick Henry.
No, probably not.
So it's tough.
It becomes like almost a Justice Hill type of game, because you're just thinking and dunking, trying to create any sort of offense. Yeah, honestly, Derrick Henry is, if you have him, I'm putting him on my bench, to be honest with you. I can't start him. I wouldn't start him. And then at what point do the Patriots give up on Ramondre Stevenson? Because I am fed up that he is getting goal line touches when he is fumbling the ball.
So it got interesting last night, because they lost their backup, Antonio Gibson, to a torn ACL.
Yep.
So now it's either Stevenson or it's the rookie, Trevion Henderson.
Yep.
Didn't he score last night?
I am not rushing. I don't think he.
I thought he scored. I could have. I fell
I don't
asleep.
Believe so.
I fell asleep. So who knows? But that's a really interesting predicament for them to be in because Stevenson is typically the bell cow.
Yeah.
But to your point, the dude just can't hold on to the football right now.
Yeah, it's three fumbles this year.
I feel like he scored. I'm gonna look.
I mean, honestly. What does Henderson have to do to get the starting nod at this point?
Dude.
And I feel so bad for Antonio Gibson because he finally got the ball.
Correct.
I feel like he finally got reins on that backfield, and boom, his ACL's out. And I felt so bad.
No, it was Stevenson both times. I was wrong.
Yeah, Stevenson both. Yep. Yeah, you say, hey. Yeah,
4
Stevenson.
Yard and 7 yard rush.
Yeah, he had 2 touchdowns.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
And, yep. That one I just put in there because I have Henderson in one league, and I'm just upset.
Yeah. I said preseason that I expected Trevion Henderson to win Offensive Rookie of the Year.
Mm.
And so far, they've just not factored him into the offense, which is really surprising to me.
Right.
Because he's dynamic.
Yeah.
He's a kick returner for a reason. He's explosive.
Yeah.
So you would think that they would kind of factor that into their offense a little bit, especially when you have a guy who can't hold on to the football.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know when it's gonna happen.
I'm with you.
Okay.
What else you got?
That's all I had. All right. Those three.
Continuing on the running back conversation, and this is, you're the perfect person to ask for this because you watch all of their games.
Oh no!
What is going on with Alvin Kamara?
Mm.
Because I have him in two leagues,
mm-hmm.
and I'm at the point now where like, do I drop him and pick up Kendre Miller?
Mm-hmm.
Because every time I see a Saints play or a Saints highlight, frickin' Miller. is in the backfield, not Alvin Kamara.
Kamara.
Like, is he even playing?
Hey, he's been playing. I think yesterday they kind of laid off a little bit on him on the second half because he kind of like took a hard shot on a run play. And after that, I saw him in for like one more drive, and then all of a sudden it was just Kendre Miller the entire time. But yeah, Alvin Kamara, I feel like it has a couple factors in here. Our offensive line isn't necessarily, you know, extraordinary when it comes to run blocking. And I feel like there's a lack of acknowledgement that the outside runs are a little bit more dynamic in terms of Alvin Kamara's skill set rather than, you know, just running up the middle. I feel like they run it up the middle with Alvin Kamara way too often. And those are getting stopped for like 1 or 2 yard gains. But if you pitch it outside, give him a little bit of space, you know, half the field for him. I feel like he still has some moves, but I don't feel like he's as agile or as you know, slippery as he was in the past.
And I feel like, again, you'd be able to tell me better, but his receiving stats are not there. Like, he used to be good for 5 to 7 dump offs a game. And, like, even if it was 5 catches for, let's just say, you know, 20 or 30 yards, that's mm-hmm. 8 points receiving the ball right there.
Yep.
And he's just not, it's just not happening this year.
Yeah, no. I mean, he, past 2 games, I felt like he's been, there's a couple balls that he's dropped.
Thanks, Alvin.
Yeah, thanks, Alvin. He's kind of taking his, head off the ball, you know, looking upfield, seeing what's around the corner. But from what I could tell, I feel like a lot of defenses are focusing a lot. They're like almost spying Alvin Kamara the entire time. As soon as he comes out of the backfield, there's like a defender right there waiting for him at like, you know, 3 yards down the field. So it's not really allowing for a lot of dump offs by Rattler to Kamara. And I feel like Rattler might even have something to prove by throwing downfield a lot more than just dumping it off to Kamara. I feel like it's a combination of a lot of factors. It just so happens that Kamara's not the beneficiary in this standpoint. And, I mean, it's hard to say not to pick up Kendre Miller because you don't know where they'll be at in terms of the trade deadline and whether they, you know, trade Kamara. But, I mean, Kamara would be a big loss for the Saints fan base itself.
Yeah, and I mean, the only reason I haven't picked up Miller yet is because other than the one touchdown he had last week against the Bills, he's playing a lot, but he's not putting up big statistics.
Yeah, no. He's more of the, you know, go up the gut. He'll make one cut and then, you know, see where that gets you. But like I said, the offensive line isn't really creating that push. That's going to create, you know, an explosive 50-yard run play for Condre Miller. Condre Miller might be a little bit more explosive with that downhill running. But so he'll probably get like 5-6 yards per touch. But to me, that's more his skill set. But he's just not getting enough reps right now to really be a focal point in terms of fantasy wise.
So last one for me, mm-hmm. And this is selfish because I have this person. what are you thinking? What do you do right now with a guy like Zay Flowers?
Zay Flowers.
So, and the reason I bring him up is he had a really good performance the first 3 weeks, mm-hmm. first 4 weeks. And then Lamar went out.
Yep.
And his, you know, he had an okay game yesterday. But my fear is if Lamar misses any extended amount of time, his value and his performance is going to go way down. So you tell me what you think about this. But like right now, I'm trying like hell to trade him while he's still got some value. That's what I'm trying to do because okay. like he's had a great 3 or 4 weeks. You look at his points, his totals, you think, yeah, that, you know, that's and quite honestly, try and take advantage of somebody who may not be paying attention.
Right.
And realize that Lamar's out.
Right.
That's where my mind is with Zay Flowers, because I feel like I got to make something happen with him before, you know, all of a sudden Lamar's out the next 4 or 5 weeks and Flowers is putting up no production.
Right. Yeah. No. So I feel like there's two sides to this. Zay Flowers has never been, you know, that prototypical wide receiver one guy. He's more of like a slot receiver, you know, wide receiver two that sneaks into, you know, the open soft side of the zone or something, you know, beats his man coverage every once in a while. But he gets more open because of Lamar Jackson and last year Derrick Henry creating those soft defensive passing defenses, because everyone's trying to, you know, scrunch the box, trying to stop the run. But Zay Flowers with Cooper Rush, it's dangerous simply because he's not that prototypical wide receiver one. I feel like Cooper Rush might look more towards DeAndre Hopkins just because Hopkins has that height. And you
or
know,
even Rashad Bateman. Rashad Bateman is taller than Zay Flowers.
Yep. And that build, that body build where, you know, you can shield off a defender here and there, whereas, you know, Zay Flowers is going to look for the soft spot in the zone. But, yeah, Zay Flowers, that's a tough bet, especially with someone who doesn't have a whole lot of reps with in Cooper Rush.
My only hope that I have, and the reason why I haven't really, you know, devoted my time to trying to find a trade partner for him is I feel like they're going to be down a lot.
Yeah, they're going to be passing.
They're going to be throwing the ball a lot.
Yeah,
which bodes well for Flowers. So that's he's the one guy where if I look at any of my teams that I have, I'm like, all right, I really got to decide what I want to do with him, because now I firmly believe if you're going to trade him, now's the time.
Yeah,
if you want to try and replace him and get some value before he plummets, if he plummets, right. Got to do it now.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, with hamstring injuries, with Lamar Jackson, who knows how long that's going to take to heal? And then all of a sudden, is Lamar Jackson going to run the same amount that he did before? I mean, there's so many questions and variables that go into the Zay Flowers question. If you can find a trade partner for Zay Flowers, I try to sell high on him, especially if he has a big game with Cooper Rush. I'm not sure if any. You know, I don't think one big game with Zay Flowers from Cooper Rush is going to, like, you know, be the telltale sign of that's going to be the consistent output that Zay Flowers is all of a sudden going to start doing. But yeah, passing volume, it'll be there simply because the defense is atrocious. But whether Cooper Rush or Lamar Jackson is the same after he comes back, it's hard to say.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not loving it.
Yeah.
All right. So we will wrap up with our picks, as we always do. I did a little better this week.
You went 2-1, didn't you?
I went 2-1. So just kind of recap here. My lock was the one I got wrong. I picked the Chargers over the Commanders. Mm. They were favored by 2.5. I correctly predicted the Panthers over the Dolphins. Dolphins were favored by 1.5. And then our game of the week was Bucks over Seahawks. You know, I'm always taking Baker.
Yeah.
I took the Bucks. So I went 2-1, 5-10 overall.
5-10.
You count yours up there, buddy. Before you start laughing.
No, because I heard yours. Like, man, what's mine,
dude? Like, you're probably bad. Maybe a game or two better, but not by much.
Even I don't know about that one. Yeah, I know I got that lock wrong. What did I get right? I know I got one something right. Locke was the Saints or the Giants. Hey, the Saints Attaboy. Pulling through.
Good job.
Hey, way to go. And then my upset was the Browns over the Vikings. They almost pulled it off.
Yeah, they did almost. You're right.
Yep. No,
All right. So my lock this week, I have the Cowboys -3.5 over Carolina.
Okay.
And then my upset is the Titans over the Raiders. So a team coming off a big win versus a team coming off of a really bad loss.
Yeah.
So I like that. Raiders favored by 1.5. Cowboys only have to cover by 4. For that lock to hold. Cowboys are playing very, very well right now.
That's crazy to me. That's Dak. Only a 4-point spread.
I know. That's why I jumped at that one.
Yeah.
So we'll see there. And then our game of the week is going to be Sunday Night Football, Detroit at Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
I'm taking Detroit.
Okay. Yeah, so my lock, I mean, I didn't like any of the rest of the games, to be honest with you, but I went with the Rams over the Ravens, even though it's a 7.5-point spread. Yeah, that's a little bit tough to cover, but I feel like Matthew Stafford and Kyrie Williams are flying high right now. Those guys are putting up points in all sorts of ways. Puka Nacua, I mean, you name it. The Ravens, I feel like, have no answers for any of it. And then my upset, I got the Jags over the Seahawks. Seahawks traveling.
I thought
east.
About that one, yeah.
Yep, 1.5 points around that. But Jacksonville, you know, we'll see how they do tonight against Kansas City. But, you know, it's hard for a team from the Pacific Northwest to travel all the way down to Florida. And
gosh, that's got to be a long flight.
That's going to be a long day for Seattle, to be honest. And the game of the week, I also picked Detroit over the Chiefs. Okay. Detroit's just way too good right now.
Yeah, agreed.
Yep.
All right, well, that'll do it. Hope you guys enjoyed. Thanks for tuning in, as always.
Hey.
Send us some feedback. Send us some comments, some top stories. Hit us up on social media. We are now also on TikTok.
Oh, the TikTok.
So we added that to our repertoire. So please give us a follow at What Do They Know Pod.
Mm-hmm.
So we post some reels on there, some content. Mm-hmm. Give us some feedback, comment. Let us know what you think.
Mm-hmm.
And as always, we'll see you next week.
We'll see if the Saints can make it 2-0. Let's go.
Not likely. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
We want to hear from you. Stir up some conversation or controversy and reach out to us on our social media platforms to add to the weekly conversations.